You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. Also, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website needs. And now, The Porchcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a special edition, episode 51 of the Porchcast. We're broadcasting from Strange Craft Beer here in Denver, Colorado. Really excited to be joined by Tim Meyer. Tim, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Thanks for having me, finally, yeah. Tristan. Finally. Actually, you know, Area 51, I kind of like that. Strange Craft.
Perfect
episode
tie-in.
51. Trump's going to be good. It's going to be good. Hopefully we don't like diverge off to some alien weird stuff, but who knows.
Oh yeah.
And as per usual, as you can hear in the background, we are joined by Hunter Grondin and Sam Sly on the ones and twos. And guess what?
You're welcome.
We've got a full house. I'm really excited, folks. Sammy Hartman is back in the hot seat, woo! Joining us as our co-host.
We're going to judge you real hard tonight.
That's
because
fine,
this
I'm
is like strike four. This is kind of like the final like stand on the island.
Or, we're playing like elementary t-ball where you don't really strike out.
Just, yeah, like, we just sit around and stare at the
sky. Try again.
Hey, as long as there's beer, yeah. Everything's okay. No judgment here on the Porchcast. Welcome back, everyone. It's a special post-CBC edition.
Total judgment.
Total judgment. That is not going to let it go. That's going to be the theme for this Porchcast. No El Camino references, just dogging on
Fast
Sammy.
And loose. Fast and loose.
Well, guys, many of us were out in Nashville for CBC 2 weekends ago, 2 weeks ago, rather. And so I think we're going to let's spend the first part talking about Nashville and CBC. For those who aren't familiar, CBC is the Craft Brewers Conference. It's really the industry-facing conference. Lots of seminars and sessions, guest speakers, keynote speakers, and of course the trade show. And then this year, as with every other year, there's the World Beer Cup. We're not going to spend a ton of time breaking down all the winners because, I mean, it's impossible to go through all the winners.
But let's be honest. There was some great first timers this year that pulled down their first hardware.
Oh, absolutely.
At the World Beer Cup.
And we do want to touch on some of those winners.
And let's also be honest, CBC is honestly and truly an excuse for 60,000 brewers and brewery owners to get drunk for 5 days straight.
That's what I was going to allude to. The real money is in the external events that happen.
And the cocktails.
Yes.
And we're already looking forward to next year.
Yes. Yeah. Nice little teaser. We'll jump into that partway through the podcast. But
I know I'm like totally going off script, out of line. Tristan's got this thing all lined up, and I'm already ignoring it.
No. That's why we have you here, Tim. And, of course, we're also going to dive into Strange Craft Beer's 8th anniversary taking place this weekend. Really excited to hear.
8th.
Yeah. It's a big one.
Surprised
Strange,
you're still in it.
Strange paving the way for craft breweries here in Denver, and we want to hear more on that story. We'll dive into, of course, the news that's been happening in the industry. We'll touch on La Folie getting, going back to its roots.
Yay.
We'll touch a little bit on the initial reactions to Josh Noel's upcoming novel, Barrel Aged Stout, and selling out. And then we'll also maybe get to Bud Light Orange, which is absolutely ridiculous, but fitting since we're here at Strange and in the orange theme. So,
hey,
the only thing that it has
Mango Tango Orange is the official color.
Absolutely, Mango Tango is that? Yeah, that's the
Bud Light Orange.
Like that's the Pantone color.
Well, no, that's the color of my Jeep, sorry. And it somehow managed to exactly match our stickers. So that's the official color, Mango Tango.
I love it. Well, let's start with CBC. For those who aren't familiar, because it is so industry-forward, the Craft Brewers Conference takes place every year in a different city. This year, it happened to be in Nashville. The year before, it was in D.C. I know Hunter, Sammy, Tim, and I were all out there. Unfortunately, Sam had to miss out.
Yeah. What the?
We're gonna he had jury Sam duty.
Somebody had to stay home and work.
Jury duty.
Oh.
Really?
Civil
have you ever heard of jail?
Thank you for your service.
I have heard of jail.
You can actually choose to go there instead of going to jury duty, and then could have gone to Nashville.
I've already been to jail enough, so I'm kind of good on the jail thing. Twice as nice.
He didn't want to go back and visit all his friends.
It's not time for that reunion just yet. But anyway, CBC, Nashville. What were your all's thoughts on Nashville? I want to hear just the city itself. What was your all's impressions?
I'm
moving there.
Yeah, I would go back there like this. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised at how delightful Nashville was.
For all of y'all uninitiated northern folk, is this the first time, Sammy, that you've been down south?
Yeah, I went to Atlanta, 6 weeks ago? That's but right. Yeah, Nashville was, I guess, my second foray, and I was just very excited to experience the city, and all I heard was honky-tonk culture, and like my little Western heart was like, yes, please, I will drink domestic beers and listen to country music all week.
Hunter was all about the honky-tonks, right?
I was and I wasn't.
Oh, really? Honky-tonk.
Yeah. Well, I did put the honk in it. Yeah.
What was the downside? What were your negatives?
I listened to honky-tonk regularly anyways, so I didn't want to fall into too many of the tourist traps.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I was more actually.
What were you impressed about?
Cocktail scene and food scene.
For okay. Sure. Food scene was incredible.
Yeah. Tim, so I knew about the music.
Tim, what were your big takeaways from the city itself?
I was extremely blown away by at least 80% of the breweries that I hit, and my main goal there was let's get to some of these breweries, many that are less than 4 or 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
The Nashville beer scene is nowhere near as old as the Colorado beer scene.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the ones that I hit were phenomenal. It's Tennessee Beer Works was 3 blocks from the house that we were renting with Freetail out of San Antonio. And Matt,
it's a burgeoning craft beer scene.
And the fun part, sure. Matt, who used to be the head brewer at Conic Creek in Grand Junction, is the head brewer at Tennessee Beer Works. So we had a little awesome Colorado taste of home at Tennessee Beer Works. I really enjoyed some of the sours at Yazoo.
Ryan is doing a tremendous job over there at Yazoo with the sour
program. Yeah. That place was packed. I have never seen a brew house and a tank farm so cram-packed solid with people because the tasting room was shoulder room only.
It's awesome.
And
it's going to be interesting.
The beers were solid. And what was it? Bearded Iris?
Bearded Iris.
8 beers on tap.
The haze craze.
8 different IPAs to choose from. Hey, what do you prefer? What would you like to drink? Oh, I guess I'll have an IPA. And all of them were solid. It was the beer scene was great, but the food scene, I have never seen 150 people stand in line for an hour and a half to get chicken.
What? Did you run the gamut of Nashville hot chickens?
I hit one. Okay. I apologize. No, I'm sorry. I hit two.
Okay.
I hit two.
Well, what were your?
We hit Hattie B's.
Same.
Prince's was a little too far to walk.
Yep.
Hattie B's. I thank God my head brewer Tyler ordered ahead.
Oh, nice.
He ordered online so that we could get takeout.
Brilliant.
So we could skip the hour line with the 150 people in it. Party Fowl, F-O-W-L.
I've heard really good things about
this. Was 2 blocks from our house, and it was not just chicken. It was a pretty nice variety menu. Everything on the menu, we had a table of 12, and everybody sampled a little of this and a little of that.
Wow.
Everything was solid.
All sorts of Southern fare.
Yep. But the barbecue down there, you can't forget the barbecue in Nashville. It's kind of a combination halfway between St. Louis and Carolina. The dry rub ribs, phenomenal. And again, people standing in line for 20, 30 minutes. They order their food. They go over to the bar. They get a beer. They sit down at a long shared table, meet some new people. 5 minutes after they sit down, their food's ready to go. They go up there and get...
It's dialed.
Thinking about if I ever wanted to open a brew pub restaurant concept with beer, make them stand in line. You don't need servers. You just need a couple of busboys to clear the tables.
Sure.
They were pumping through 1,000 people an hour. It was insane.
Yeah. People stand in line for beer. Why not?
And people are patient. I noticed one thing,
incredible.
Too. The employees are always happy. I mean, especially when you're that busy, you think that everyone's going to be a shit to you. But no, everyone's really happy.
Yeah. You got no pissed off tables. They finally got to the front of the line. The poor cashier has to suffer through, oh my God, I stood in line for an hour. This better be good. They placed their order.
I've also been sitting here for an hour.
Right.
Bringing in the same shit for an hour.
I can't imagine how many farms worth of chicken Hattie B's goes through per night.
Oh, yeah.
Decimated. My favorite of the dining experiences was Monell's. Not hot chicken, but it was a family style kind of situation where, classic Southern cooking. You've got like a 12 person table where you're sitting next to strangers. They bring out, rounds and rounds and rounds of food. We had cornbread, we had biscuits, we had fried chicken, we had pulled pork, green beans, mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, fried catfish. It was absolutely insane. And it was all you
could eat.
Dinner
time.
Pass it around the table. We had someone there who'd been there before, dialed in on the protocol, pass it to your left. And it was amazing. You were meeting cool people.
I had the most delightful homecoming, welcoming, when I landed. The very first thing that I did, because Sean and Patrick, my two coworkers, were already in Nashville, and I landed on Monday morning. And I got to the house, and they were like, get in the car, we're going. And we headed straight to Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, Bellamy Bourbon. Like, I'm telling you, top-notch, the most incredible tour, the most incredible bourbon. And you can buy, and it's distributed here.
Oh,
and
really?
It is among some of the best bourbon I've ever had, period. Bellmead, find it. And then we had Hattie B's, and we had that DoorDashed. We ordered it online, and it was delivered to us.
And then we all gained 30 pounds.
And then we all gained 30 pounds. And then, not to be forgotten, though, along with all the other breweries, but Southern Grist. We hung out with the Southern Grist boys all week. Oh, my God. I mean, talk about hospitality. Talk about kick-ass beers. Talk about an incredible production space.
They're doing some really inventive
stuff.
Holy
cannoli. Yeah, their Finback collaboration, Batita, is this freaking Berliner Weiss with coconut that I still cannot stop thinking about.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, you said Sean and Patrick? What do they do?
Sean is the owner of Cerebral, and Patrick is our new hire. He does sensory training and is the production manager.
And he happens to be a writer on Porch Drinking.
And he happens to be a writer on Porch Drinking.
I thought you guys hired more sales staff.
What is that supposed to get out of here?
All right.
We got him blushing.
We're going to jump right into it. So we've talked a lot about food, but CBC itself is definitely the focal point of craft beer each year. It's an awesome opportunity for us as an industry to come together, find out what's really happening in the industry, and hear from the Brewers Association, hear about trends, hear about what their major initiatives were. And I feel like this year the big point that they were hammering home was this stronger together theme. And they were also absolutely doubling down on the independent seal. We saw the seal everywhere. We saw it on, the street sides. They had banners, a giant banner on the convention center. And then even the Wi-Fi password was Seek the Seal, which I thought was pretty hilarious. So in your all's opinion, for those of you all who were there, do you feel like it was a little overkill in this, or do you feel like they were right on point? Tim, I know you're a huge proponent for independence, so I'd love to hear your perspective.
I, from the beginning, I've had mixed feelings on the BA's take on craft versus crafty.
Yeah.
And it's not that I agree or disagree with AB trying to kill all of us. I mean, that's just obvious.
That's absolutely
the fact that they brought 10, what is it, 10, 11, 12 now, craft breweries, and are marketing it to their 1 billion customers or whatever they have now.
Being very deceitful in their efforts, too.
But the message that the BA is using rings true and rings solid, understandable in the industry. All the 6,000 craft breweries totally agree with the message and understand it. The hard part is the 90% of the American beer drinking market that the last thing they want to deal with is any sort of negative ad campaign You tell a beer drinker they're drinking shit and they should drink this instead, it's not going to win them over.
It's antagonizing them and kind of belittling the consumer in a sense.
So, and I was harshing Julia Hertz about this at Big Beers to the point where she just told me to go sit down at the Avery Dogfish dinner. And we still haven't completed that conversation. Julia, I still owe you dinner in Boulder. I will get up there. The average Joe beer drinker has to be approached with a positive message.
Absolutely.
If we can turn around the crafty approach to where we are getting some crossovers from the Bud Miller Coors drinker, and they start exploring some new beer options, it could end up backfiring on AB InBev, where they convert their Bud Miller Coors core with the crafties, and if we positively approach them instead of negatively go after them, we could conceivably bring many more drinkers into the craft beer scene.
I totally agree. I have a lot of douchebag friends, and those douchebag friends love Coors Light, truly. And they're like the bro-y, easy drinking types. But they drink Coors Light because they like it's easy for them. They haven't been introduced to good craft beer. But what they don't like is sometimes feeling pressured into trying a new beer because of like the pretentiousness that comes with craft beer. And like the awkwardness of like they haven't tried a new craft beer before and they don't like being treated like they're like an outsider.
It's just like when you go into a new restaurant and you've never been there before. It's a new cuisine and you're like, I feel uncomfortable, which means that maybe I don't want to go in there. Maybe that's not what I want. Maybe I'll go back and get a freaking sandwich.
Right. Most people don't like to leave their comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right. Regardless of what that is.
Yeah, exactly. The BA talks about, Eric Wallace talked about the derogatory ad campaigns that AB has put out in the last 2 years. Craft beer is still suffering from bitter beer face ads of 20 years ago.
Yeah.
When you talk to the average non-craft beer drinker, they assume the craft beer is your typical San Diego IPA. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hardcore hoppy. It's going to hit you in the front end, and it's going to linger in the back end, and it's going to be hops, 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 hops. When we have people taste Farmhouse here, or we have people taste Cherry Creek here, and they're telling us how much they hate beer, and they, I don't drink beer because craft beer is too bitter. And then they taste Farmhouse, so they taste Cherry Creek. They're like, oh my God, this is amazing, but this isn't beer. This is something else. And you're like, no, this is just not an IPA. Totally. There's so many, there's hundreds of different options of beer that you could try.
Right.
And the reason, part of the reason we have 16 different beers on tap, I mean, there's tons of people out there that hate Cherry Creek because it's too fruity for them. And, and they're like almost apologetic when they complain about it being too fruity. I'm like, no, don't worry about it. That's why I have 15 other beers for you to try.
Yeah, we all have different
tastes. I've got IPAs. I've got stouts. I've got Belgians. I've got German lagers. You're going to, if you go through all 16 beers and there's nothing that you like, then we're going to have a conversation. But the first point is getting the average Joe Bud Miller Coors drinker to understand craft beer is not bitter beer face.
Right. Or it's okay. I mean, I do drink Miller Lite. I drink Coors Light. I drink a lot of Banquet. And I'm okay with it. But I know that obviously I'm in the industry and love beer and craft beer. So I drink a lot of different beer. And I know where to go when I want a pilsner and a lager. A lot of my friends do not. Correct. And without just like kind of delicately educating them, a lot of people are intimidated, and without like this, you know.
And Hunter, I think you touch on a key there. It's all about education and coming at it from a place of grace rather than abrasiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that people can feel like they're welcomed and not pushed away by the exclusivity of this scary, crafty world.
If you approach
them
positively, let me help you.
Yeah.
Let me help you taste and explore a world that you didn't know existed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That is so much better than telling them they're freaking idiots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what they're doing is stupid and wrong.
Yeah.
Do you know what Budweiser does to our industry? What the hell have you drink Budweiser? I don't know. My dad's been drinking for fucking 30 years.
Yeah.
I grew up around it. I have like Budweiser tins all over my house. Right. I started drinking it, but now I've started drinking it in front of people, and now I'm being shamed for it. And
that's the last thing we want in a beer world.
Yeah.
Beer should be fun. It should be appreciated.
And
inclusive,
be overarching. Like, there's enough room at the table for what we're doing, and every now and again, more often than not, yes, like, I'd love a Coors Light, like, I'll take a PBR, like, I mean, I just think that there's space for everybody.
Now, people need to understand that options are safe.
Yes.
Because people don't understand that. So I want to say this one example. It's my friend, my buddy Drew, we've been best friends for forever. I know Tristan. But Drew and I went to Falling Rock together. And Drew knew when we went in there, this is about a year and a half ago, and he knew when we walked in, he looked at me and was like, all right, man, what should I order? Because I'm a Coors Light drinker, but I know you're going to get mad at me if I drink Coors Light without even asking for a suggestion. I loved it. I was like, thank you. So I got him a slow pour Pilsner from Bierstadt, and he drank that shit, and he turned around and was like, holy shit. Like, his wide-eyed, like, wow, like, this is amazing. He knew right away this is 100 times the beer that Coors Light is, and and he paid a dollar more for it, and he was in love with it. He was in love with it, and now he knows it's safe to go into any bar with a Pilsner on tap, and say like, "Oh, is that local Pilsner? Can you tell me about it? That's the style that I like."
Starting to get the lingo down.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, they don't understand that a Coors Light or any of the other macros are an actual beer.
Yep.
But, like, you can find, like, an actual beer style. Like, you can find something that tastes very, very, very similar, better, but very similar.
Yep.
Basically anywhere that you go.
Yep.
Now, see, you, instead of being a craft beer soldier, were
a friend.
A craft beer ambassador.
Yeah.
Right.
For your friend.
Right.
It's a great way of putting it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. Now, without making him feel ashamed.
Because we were all there once. I mean, that's the thing. We all started there, too.
Yeah. The one that started drinking craft beer from the very get-go.
Started drinking.
Call
like,
me and let's talk.
Exactly. Whoever's first beer was, I mean, like
Plenty
a freaking.
Older,
yeah.
When I was 19, 18, 19, 20 years old, we watched Entourage. On the TV show Entourage, they all drink Budweiser, Red Label, Bud Heavy, Diesel, whatever you want to call it, bottles. Guess what we bought in college? Budweiser fucking bottles.
And that's where that money and influence and marketing budget comes into play.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I want to touch on this because, I think recently, this past week in particular, or last week rather, we saw, kind of a back and forth between Pete Coors. Pete Coors actually put out an open letter kind of criticizing Eric Wallace's statements during the keynote speech. About their kind of like antagonism with Coors and the macro breweries. But as I was talking to a friend recently who is in the industry, and they put it in a great way. It's actually, I feel like the BA should approach this as a sliding scale, because there's such a huge discrepancy between, Budweiser versus even a Coors versus even of Founders and Avery. It feels like there's like a different tier system that we should be approaching it, whereas it feels like the BA is lumping them all together into one.
There's a huge problem with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the industry, we understand the negative trade practices that AB InBev is practicing. We understand the tactics that they're using, buying 10, 12 crafty breweries and
undercutting,
taking
pricing.
Over a bar with their distributor saying, okay, we've got Bud, we've got Bud Light, and we've got these 10 craft beers on tap. So you're set. Cut one check a month, you're good. To lump Coors, to lump founders to lump Avery into that one group without being more specific does not just those breweries a disservice. It does the BA and the BA's membership and craft beer in general a disservice.
Absolutely.
I mean, people don't understand when we're launching this negative ad campaign against big beer. Oh, it's not craft. Don't drink it. There wouldn't be craft beer in Colorado without Coors. And I tell people about that all the freaking time. When a couple of professors in Boulder approached Coors when they were trying to get Boulder beer open. Pete Coors said, yeah, give them whatever they need. We're going to be stronger together.
Totally.
And there wouldn't be a craft beer industry in Colorado if Coors hadn't taken an attitude like that. Strange wouldn't have gotten open in 2010 if Breckenridge hadn't been so excited to have these couple of idiots opening a one-barrel brewery six blocks from 471 Calumet. We wouldn't have had hops the first year if Breckenridge hadn't said, take whatever you need. You pay us when you can.
Yeah, in fact, Coors, I know Coors and Avery still to this day offer sensory training to pretty much anybody who requests it.
So does Breckenridge.
Ratio,
yeah.
and the ratio of all our hops from Coors when we first opened.
Yep.
All of them.
Because they had
like a hop store. Like we didn't like drive to Coors and like, where's the hop hall? We're here to buy some hops because they were willing to help us out early on because we could not afford hop contracts.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of the language that really has, you know, put people on edge in that they're really just kind of antagonizing this entire macro as a whole when really we should be talking about specifics and issues. And I think that we as an industry should come together and be more cognizant of that moving forward.
I 100% agree. If we were educating the public more about our specific concerns rather than just lumping everybody that doesn't fit a arbitrary definition and saying they're the enemy, we would go a long way towards bringing more drinkers into craft beer. How do you, and this is the conversation that I started with Julia at the Avery Dogfish dinner at Big Beers, which the Brewers Association was hosting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, don't you find it a little bit that you guys are hosting this dinner between Adam Avery and Sam Calagione that's been a 15-year tradition at Big Beers, and you just kicked them out of the Brewers Association because they're not craft anymore, they're not quality, don't drink them, and you guys are hosting the beer dinner?
I mean, that's a great point. And I mean, we saw the fact that macro breweries are still participating in World Beer Cup, they still participate in GABF, and you know, that's something that, you know, it there needs to be a hard definition, I think, or delineation between, you know, are we embracing the macros and allowing them to participate in these you know, competitions and events, and are we completely saying no and we're turning our back and really, you know, I don't think it should be either way. I think there should be some sort of understanding of like, and that's our policy on porch drinking is we decided as a team that because of what Anheuser-Busch stands for and because of their practices, they're the one exclusion that we have on our website in terms of content. We'll still report the news if they're, you know, if they execute another acquisition, we're still going to report on it, but we don't include them in any sort of fluff pieces or, you know, feature pieces or event showcases. It's just not helping the industry. And so that's the one delineation that we have, but everything else, I think anything that has been a positive proponent for supporting craft, we still are going to shine a light on.
Good. And as long as you keep your drinkers informed, your listeners informed about those policy choices that you're making, mm-hmm. and educate them on why you're saying yes or why you're saying no, mm-hmm. so that they're better informed.
Absolutely.
That's great. Unfortunately, I'm assuming that about 99.95% of your listeners are not Bud Miller Coors drinkers.
Oh, absolutely.
And until we start approaching them positively, we're never going to introduce them to the wider world of craft beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to jump back into it so that we can actually
hear
more on Strange Craft's 8th anniversary. Tim, it's been great having you on so far. We're excited to dive deeper into Strange a little bit more after the break.
Do I get to come back on the break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Hang tight. This has been The Porchcast. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices that you have. Give us a positive ranking if you like what you're listening to. We'll be back in just a moment. Hang tight. This is The Porchcast. Hey, folks. This is Tristan over at The Porchcast. I'm excited to tell you about the inaugural Red Rocks Beer Festival taking place August 19th at Red Rocks Amphitheater. The event is going to feature The Cult, Stone Temple Pilots, and Bush all performing, in addition to a tasting event that will feature breweries from around the state. Once again, that's August 19th at Red Rocks Amphitheater. Find out more at redrocksonline.com. This is the inaugural Red Rocks Beer Festival. Alrighty, folks. We are back with episode 51 of The Porchcast. We had a nice little break here to refuel on beers. We're going to depart from CBC, but before we do, it's important to note that the Craft Brewers Conference will be returning to Denver in 2019. And we're pretty excited about that. Not really. We're actually going to have 3 major beer events in the span of, like, what, 15 what, yeah, months?
15, like, 11 months. I'm just so...
Ridiculous.
Like I was saying.
What's wrong with that?
Just my
so
liver
tired.
Weeks.
Yeah.
My liver weeks. Oh, wham.
No, but be on the lookout. The Craft Brewers Conference, all of the external events are available to the public to join. And it's a blast. Yeah. Last time,
it's an opportunity for Colorado to show the rest of the craft beer industry how to do it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Love that.
Absolutely. And all of those whiny babies out there who were crying about the fact that Denver gets CBC again, we're just going to turn them around and show them a hell of a party.
Yeah, Denver's so. The shit.
Whoa, who did... Who got twice? Didn't Washington get it twice?
D.C. with their...
Between
with their
the last
climb,
Denver
yeah.
and this Denver? Come on, wham.
Well, Tim, the main reason that we're here today is to talk about Strange Craft. And
oh, we're going
to
talk about my brewery?
Yeah, woo! We're going to talk about your brewery. No, man, you know, it's been really cool. You all have been around for 8 years now. You're celebrating the 8th anniversary.
8 years on Saturday, May 19th. Oh, my God, I forgot my birthday.
And, you know, I've actually been in Colorado for just a little over 8 years. So it's been awesome following your all's growth throughout the years. And you all really were one of the forefathers of introducing me to craft beer. So Strange Craft holds a very special place in my heart.
Thanks, Tristan.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, for those who aren't as familiar and, you know, maybe those who are listening around the country, tell us a little bit about Strange and how you all got your start.
Strange Brewing Company back in 2009 got its start when my partner John and I got laid off from, well, not really laid off from the Rocky Mountain News. The Rocky Mountain News shut down in February 2009, after 100-something years. Rocky Mountain News was the oldest newspaper in Colorado.
Preferred one, too.
And, yeah, it was my preferred one, yeah. too. And now with all the BS that the Denver Post is going through, we're not going to go off on a tangent about print is dead or anything like that. But we had the rug pulled out from under us in February 2009, what the heck is an IT guy in his early, mid-40s going to do in the job market in the middle of the Great Recession? Let's think about it. 2009. The Great Recession was a year strong. Credit was not to be had because credit was part of the cause of the Great Recession. Nobody had any money to give. Jobs were at a premium. Unemployment was pretty good, double digit. What do you do? What do? Do you, like, just take a 50% pay cut and take some shitty job that somebody right out of college would take? Or do you go find... I'm sorry. Or do you find your first, you know, chase a dream and try and turn lemons into lemonade? So Strange Brewing Company was born because of two homebrewers getting laid off, losing their jobs. We started out on a one-barrel system, started out on my homebrew system. We had five recipes that we felt pretty strongly about, and we figured we would create the other ones as we went. We pretty brashly put 8 taps on the back wall, even though we only had 5 recipes to start. and we only opened with 2 recipes on tap.
Now, how many breweries were open in Denver proper at that time?
9. Wow. We were the 10th.
Are you kidding me?
We sat down and we looked at that, and Ed Sealover and I did the count, and Jonathan Shikes and I did the count, and we came up with Strange being the 10th brewery to open in Denver City Limits in 2010.
Congratulations.
That's incredible.
It's pretty insane. And we were pretty close. It's a little harder.
The 9 prior?
Breckenridge,
I can.
Great Divide.
Yep.
Breckenridge, Great Divide. Does Sandlot count?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Does Tivoli count?
No, they weren't open.
Prior.
No, but we're talking who was open in 2010.
Sure.
Who was serving beer? Guys? Nope.
Nope. Okay.
Yeah, yep. Winkoo, duh.
And
oh, I used to that one.
Hmm? Crazy right. Mountain?
Rock Bottom.
Rock Bottom.
Yeah.
Crazy Mountain?
Crazy Mountain was
not open.
They weren't even open up in the mountains yet.
Really? Wow.
This is fun and hard. It's super hard.
Give us the rest.
Yeah. All right, who did we do so far? Let's start at the beginning. So we had Great Divide.
Breck.
Winkoo.
Rock Bottom, Winkoop.
Sandlot.
There was
Bull and Bush.
Bull and Bush.
Nice.
There was a little brewery called Leerwitz that was doing 10 gallons at a time and wholesaling in 5-gallon kegs.
Really?
Cool.
Del Norte. Does everybody remember Del Norte?
Yeah. Yep, I do.
Oh, God. Jonathan, call in and help me.
Wasn't there a little place friend. On
that's
Colfax
eight?
That was
that's
near eight? Where the Blushing Monk was? Thirsty Monk, yeah. I thought there was... I've only been here 5 years, so...
No, those guys opened way later.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I know there's that one more seven. That when we remember it, we're going to be like, really?
Vine Street was open.
No.
Vine Street's 10 years on Saturday.
No.
That's
yeah.
But they were... I mean, it's fine. That's
no,
we're splitting hairs.
Vine Street itself. That's not
no,
a green.
Vine Street
not a
is
license.
Like only five or six.
Yeah, that's right.
You're talking Mountain Sun, which was Boulder.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's awesome.
It's insane. Now, when you get to Colorado breweries, it gets a little muddier, but we're right around 100, and now there's 370 in the state.
That's crazy. Insane. It's insane.
Damn it. Who the heck am I forgetting?
I can't remember.
Oh,
Pints.
Oh,
yeah.
Pints Pub.
Pints Pub. Wow.
Pints Pub.
That was my first Denver brew when I came out here to visit.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Good times.
Now, how have you seen this industry evolve and change, at least in this landscape of Colorado and Denver in particular? You know, you've been around for the whole of it, essentially. And I feel like... Strange really helped to usher in this new wave of Denver breweries. What would you say kind of really helped to propel this industry here locally?
and what has been the biggest change and lessons learned along the way?
Well, I think two of the biggest things that Strange did to help craft beer in Denver is, first of all, everybody saw that if these idiots could do it one barrel at a time. I say that only half jokingly, because we did everything possible that you could think of we did wrong, and we're still going to hit 8 years on Saturday.
That's awesome.
Well, we gotta touch and, on the name as well.
And yeah, that's one of the things that we did wrong. But I think so many people were inspired to come in and see what these two idiots were doing and realize that their dream was possible. And the fact that I was willing to, you know, let potential, and I do air quotes there, competition come in and brew with me for a while and try and learn the business from us before they open their own place, and hopefully not repeat all the same mistakes that I did. I mean, I had some greats in the industry that I started talking to in 2007. I was talking to Peter Brookhart. I was talking to Eric Wallace. I was talking to Brian Dunn. I was talking to Kevin DeLang. I had some huge resources that I could talk to on how do you open a brewery? Mm-hmm. How do you not go out of business even before you've sold your first pint? And until I talked to Kevin DeLang, those guys were telling me, all right, well, here's what you're going to need. You're going to need like $1.5 million to get started. But, you know, if you really want to get through the first couple of years, you're going to need some operating capital. So $2.5 million would be better. But they're thinking in six packs. They're totally thinking in six packs. And then, you know, thank God, Beer at Home was out of the yeast I needed on South Broadway, so I had to drive out to the Brew Hut, which was an extra 15-mile drive from my house. So I didn't always, you know, I didn't go out there every other day when I needed ingredients for whatever homebrew recipe I was working on. And I'd been out there enough that when I went there to pick up yeast and I'm looking in the back corner, I'm like, what's with the wrought iron ice cream parlor furniture? And Steve at the register is like, well, that's our new tasting room for our new brewery that we opened up next door. And I'm like, what? And all of a sudden, I didn't have to own $2 million in equipment to open a brewery.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking to Bill I, who was still at Dry Dock, and I'm talking to Kevin DeLang.
God, that's awesome.
And I'm talking to, dang it, I can never remember his name, the Scottish guy that used to work at Dry Dock. I'm sorry, I apologize if you're listening to this. Don't hate me. I think it was Lachlan. All of a sudden it became possible.
Yeah.
That some idiot brewing 30 gallons at a time on his homebrew setup might actually make it work. And when you sit down and you look at the margins on a $5 pint versus a $6 six-pack, it's much easier to calculate out, I can make this work at 300 barrels a year versus 3,000 barrels a year and just squeaking by. I can make this work with 4 or 5 employees versus 45 employees.
Sure.
And when others were able to come in and taste our beers and see our ridiculous operation with 4 1-barrel brights, 4 1-barrel fermenters, 2 3-barrel fermenters, and they're just like, wait a minute, you guys brew 3 times on Monday, 2 times on Tuesday, 27 hours, and you end up with 150 gallons, and you're out of beer every 5 days, and you guys are still making a profit. We were making a profit from day one. And my partner and I said we weren't going to pay ourselves the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. We're going to reinvest everything in the business. And after 18 months, we had 5 10-barrel fermenters. We had a 10-barrel brew house. we were finally wholesaling to bars and restaurants. We're like, okay, well, maybe we'll start paying ourselves at 18 months instead of 24.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Now, in turn, we touched a little bit. We alluded to the name situation. I know a homebrew shop out in the East Coast had...
We can say the word mass hole.
Tell us about that situation and you know what that did in terms of impact on Strange Crab.
I think it's karma's a bit, and I think we kind of brought it on ourselves. I always joke, I mean, because John and I, we were the only two employees for the first 6 months, and then Lila came on from Black Sky, and then Jules and Daryl got tired of being regulars and waiting for me to finally get around and pouring them beer, so they started just working the bar themselves and helping out. But when I would give tours, I would joke, because somebody's always going to say, ha, 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 where'd you get the name Strange Brew? And I'd say, well, you know, that depends on who sues us first. If MGM Studios sues us, I'll say, no, it's the 1967 Cream song, Strange Brew.
Yeah.
And if Rhino Records sues us first, it's, no, it's the 1983 movie about a couple of drunk Canadians looking for free beer. And, you know, if either one of those had sued us, it would have been a great PR
great
story.
Nobody.
And then we'd have changed our name.
Fuck.
But a homebrew shop out of Massachusetts, close where the down. Hell is the story there? I mean...
And oh,
so early on, I approached it like I approach everything. We can find a solution to this. Let's sit down and we'll talk about it. But the guy, all he wanted was money. Just wanted money. This was his ticket. And I'm pretty sure he thought we were the first crafty brewery that AB InBev bought. Because the money that he was talking about, we weren't even bringing in annually. And I'm just like, well, that's not going to happen.
No, thank you, but no thank you.
So instead of finding an amicable solution in 2 months, it dragged out for 18 months.
Oh, my gosh.
But the bright side of that story was, because of all the people that we had helped get started in the last year, and because of all the friends that we had made and turned into regular customers, turned into family pretty much, somebody that I had only met once decided that he was going to throw a fundraiser for us. And Josh at the time was working over at the original Rack House, which was attached to Stranahan's. And Josh Michelle decided that he was going to throw a fundraiser for us so we could raise a little bit of money towards our thousands and thousands legal of fees. Dollars of legal fees. And everybody got together. We had a festival over at the Rack House. Chris was super, super generous and set everything up for us, and it was really, really touching. Just knowing that when you treat people the way they want to be treated, they're going to do the same thing back to you.
It's the best investment.
Absolutely. It was just, oh my God, it was, I mean, it still brings a tear to my eye thinking about the public outreach. And we did a little party called Save Our Strange. And we raised like $9,000.
That's awesome.
And it was great.
That's awesome.
It was great. And it was totally positive. We weren't ragging on Massachusetts at all. We were just helping Strange out. And Strange had already helped at least a dozen breweries open before this happened in 2012. And awesome. Everybody stepped up. And this is the type of thing that I would hope and expect that if somebody was hurting and somebody was struggling, we could get at least a dozen or two dozen breweries to step in and say, hey, we're going to help out. 100%. You're going to be okay. And my only stipulation when Josh approached me was that if we didn't end up using all the money, everybody had to understand that we were going to donate it to charity. And the charity was going to be the Colorado Adaptive Sports Foundation. My son's in a wheelchair. We won't go in all that. He does more sports than I ever did as a kid, and I give my mom shit all the time that all I ever did was play baseball in the summer and ski in the winter, and my son does like a dozen different freaking sports, and he's in a wheelchair. But that's partially because of Colorado Adaptive Sports Foundation. Not only did we raise $9,000 that day, but Scott Witso, who was one of the first people that I helped open his brewery, he came in here and I tried to explain to him everything don't do. Everything don't do. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. And Scott's ears are dyslexic because everything that I told him don't do, he did. And we don't, yeah. I think that's a new, I think that's something new that we need to research more. I mean, we've done a lot of great work for dyslexia, for eyesight, but we need to work on dyslexia for hearing.
In fact, he decided to open right down the street from you.
He did. Yeah. He did. And when Witso opened and when Renegade opened, a lot of people thought, oh, my God, they're going to put you out of business. And what happened? More people came to Sun Valley. Boom. More people came to the Santa Fe Art District. More people came by to drink Colorado craft beer.
If you build it, they will come. Exactly. That's 150%.
Exactly. Yeah. But 100%. The other person that I met that day was a friend of Scott's. I don't know how Scott had been open 6 months and already had a trademark issue. But, you know, in completely ignoring everything I said don't do, Scott needed a trademark lawyer. And Carl, who was a craft beer aficionado, home brewer, he was more pissed off about this whole situation than I was. Mm-hmm. And Carl talked to me that day and he said, Tim, don't worry. We're going to get these guys. And thank God for Scott and thank God for Carl, because Carl litigated Masshole into the ground. And it was awesome.
That's great.
And what it, you know, Carl can never, he can never buy another beer again. He can never buy another beer from me again. What he did for me would have cost me $100,000-$150,000. And he just said, look, if I, you know, if I need to pay to file some paperwork, you know, if he's money out of pocket, sure, please. But everything else, pro bono.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible.
And that stems completely from treating people how you want to be treated.
I mean, yeah, it takes a village, you know? Like, it's no joke. If you build a community, they're going to be there for you.
And that's the foundation of the craft beer industry. I feel like, you know, that's what we were founded upon. And
but if you bring them in close, they're easier to kill.
Of course, Hunter chiming in.
Don't forget that.
We've got, yeah, we got aptly named it Hunter. Right?
Now, remember that too at the same time.
At two Brute.
Now, Tim, I want to touch a little bit about your all successes along
everyone's
the way too, because
right
it's
now
not all just gloom and doom.
Really,
you all have amassed three World Beer Cups. Is that correct?
Strange has two World Beer Cups. Witsen has a World Beer Cup for Jean-Claude Van Blanc.
Yep.
So we were blessed enough to get a World Beer Cup gold in 2014, last time the CBC was in Denver.
Cherry Woo! Creek, right?
For Cherry Creek.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent.
And
beer.
Then we followed that up in 2016 with a bronze for Dr. Strangelove, our barley wine.
Absolutely.
Double Woo!
Which already had a bronze at the GABF in 2012. So that's our only double winner. So here's this little, I think this year we'll probably do 650 barrels.
Wow.
650 barrel brewery that has two GABF. We have a gold and a bronze GABF and a gold and a bronze World Beer Cup.
That's pretty
awesome.
Impressive.
That's
it's
awesome.
Pretty stupid.
That's pretty awesome. Awesome. And I want to say a big thank you, too, because along the course of Porch Drinking's history, I still remember very vividly how willing and open you all were to contributing to our very first anniversary party, and and sending in some donation bottles.
Oh, so, please. Come on. We're all better and stronger as a community. And you are doing an incredible job promoting craft beer. How could I not send you beer as a thank you and say, keep doing what you're doing. Keep being positive, promoting craft beer and informing the craft beer drinker, informing beer drinkers in general. That is such a huge service. It's the least that we could do.
And thank you, Tristan, for all those beers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. No, he gives them to me.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, for sure. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to jump back into it here in a second and touch a little bit about, you know, the current state of Strange. We're going to talk a little bit about their unique unity with Wits End Brewing. And then we'll talk a little bit about the anniversary weekend to come. So hang tight. This has been the Porchcast. We'll be back in just a second. This episode of the Porchcast is brought to you by First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen, located at 1309 26th Street in Denver, Colorado. First Draft Taproom and Kitchen is your pour-your-own-draft system. You can try as much or as little as you'd like. It's like the adult version of Froyo. Once again, that's First Draft Taproom and Kitchen at 1309 26th Street in Denver, Colorado. We also want to take this opportunity to remind you about our friends at Made by Chalk. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com. Welcome back to the Porchcast. This is episode 51 here at Strange Craft
Beer. Area 51.
Area 51. There we go. We're talking to Tim Myers from Strange Craft Beer, talking about their 8th anniversary this upcoming weekend. It's a full weekend-long celebration, correct? Tell us what's happening.
Well, back in the day when I was a younger man, it would be a full week celebration. Because back in March of 2010, before we opened, I was at the Sheridan in Chicago for CBC. We keep going back to CBC. Always I don't know what CBC. The deal is. And I got accosted by this 5-foot-nothing, 100-pound-nothing craft beer crazy, crazy, crazy enthusiast who I later found out was Julia Hertz.
Yep.
Who I'm like on the 12th floor of the Sheridan, and she pins me up against the wall with some guy with a camera and says, "What are you doing for American Craft Beer Week?"
You even sounded like Julia this time.
And I was like,
I forgot that was not mine.
Opening? He said, "Oh, that's a good idea." that pretty much amounted. So about 5 seconds later, I called my partner. I was like, "What the freak are the odds of us getting open by
American Craft Beer Week?"
That's amazing.
And
so Julia Hers pushed your opening date, is what you're saying.
Julia Hers pushed me all the time.
Awesome.
So that was why we had to open middle of May. So we've always tied our anniversary week to American Craft Beer Week. But as I've gotten older, and I don't know, either wiser or lazier or tireder. Having 8 events going night after night after night for anniversary week and getting like maybe a 20% bump over your average week, I was like, you know what, Julia? I love you. I'm going to put a bunch of stuff at the end of the week, but I want to make it to 60. So we're doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this American Craft Beer Week.
That's still a longer weekend than most.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're going to, you know, why party one day? We used to say, why party one day when you, or why celebrate one day when you can party all week?
So, for those who are interested in joining in the festivities, tell us, give us a quick rundown on what's happening this week.
We always have One Barrel Wednesday.
Yep.
And One Barrel Wednesday now is a collaboration between Strange Craft, Black Sky, Chain Reaction, and The Bob, Brew on Broadway. Okay. And those guys are hardcore family. All of us grew up together. All of them came over here to learn what not to do. They've all done a great job brewing small batch and doing tasting room only. And Harry from Black Sky and I always had fun One Barrel Wednesday. It was kind of like Iron Chef. He'd show. I'd pick him up. He used to brew at Breckenridge. He was third shift. He'd get home from work at like 4, and I'd pick him up at 7:30, and we'd come to Strange with like triple espresso, double shot coffee, and all right, what are we going to brew today?
What's the ingredient?
Right.
Yeah.
What was the featured ingredient? And that was always the fun part. That was always the fun part. And some of our best recipes, you know, breakfast IPA, our number one seller, came out of sitting at Pablo's Coffee at 7:30 in the morning. What the hell are we going to brew today while we're standing in line? And we're like, let's make a citrus IPA.
No way.
And I swear to you, this was 3 months before Grapefruit Sculpin came out. And I don't know if those guys came into, because I don't know when they would have come in, because it wasn't right before a GABF.
Nope, they were just ripping lines grapefruit, of espresso right next
breakfast
to you.
Grapefruit IPA came out in March of 2011, and Sculpin came out, like, I don't know, June, July 2011. So Harry Smith from Black Sky and Tim Myers, that idiot over at Strange, came out with the Grapefruit IPA. And, you know, you can send me the royalty checks to Strange Craft Beer Company whenever you guys get around to it. This Wednesday, we'll tap one of those crazy one-barrel creations.
Tomorrow,
yeah. Oh, my God, that is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Well, when this podcast comes out, it'll be Thursday.
we have a wonderful mug club. They're not just regulars; they're family. And this year, to incentivize them to hurry up and get their renewals in, I said one of the first 50 is going to brew a beer with Tim and Scott, our new head brewer from Wits End.
Yep.
And we randomly picked one, and Gabe was the winner. And we are pouring a pinion, pine nut porter that is ridiculously amazing.
So
pine nuts give a little bit of that pine forest character, but it is so much more. The complexity of it is ridiculous. So we're doing like 2 1 barrel Wednesdays this week.
Awesome.
We're doing one on Wednesday and one on Thursday.
So what's going to be served on the Ferris wheel?
Right? I knew that was going to come up. And I told my wife when she picked that people are going to be expecting a Ferris wheel in the background. And
yep, with servers.
We're still working on that. You know, we're still working on getting the Ferris wheel in. The carnies.
Hunter's referring to the backyard.
Problem is, carnies don't have cell phones. So we haven't been able to get one to call me back yet.
Okay.
Friday is the day that I'm most excited about. Every year since 2012, we have brewed a batch of Dr. Strangelove. Actually, since 2009, because it takes 9 months to condition. And when we sent that in to the GABF in 2012 and it pulled down a bronze in the very last freaking category. So let's think about what Strange serves. Strange, one of their top selling beers is Cherry Creek. That's category 3. Okay, and then we got Dr. Strangelove, by the way, that's category 98. That's a long freaking award ceremony while you're waiting. you know, the year after Strangelove won, the latest category that we entered was 32, so that I could get up to the floor and pour beer at the Saturday members session, because we missed the first hour of the members session the year that Strangelove was entered, because the award ceremony went so long.
Oh, man.
But on Friday the 18th, we're going to have 4 years of Strangelove on tap.
No
you
way.
Can do a four-year taster flight. And then we're going to have bombers for sale of all 4 years. We're pretty short on the 14. So if you want to do a vertical, you better get in early so that you can get some of the 14. We're going to have 14, 15, 16.
Dang.
And this year I went cheap. I'm chintzy. We're only doing 180 bottles of the 17.
I couldn't even drink in
2014,
Tim.
What's that?
I couldn't even drink in 2014.
Why is that?
I was 20.
Apparently fucking young.
Oh, in 24. Well, you didn't want to drink it in 2014. You wanted to wait a year.
Exactly.
So
finally here.
When you turned 21, it was just coming into its prime.
Boom.
Hunter's made up a lot of ground since then.
A lot of ground.
Caught up for lost time.
22 years.
And then on Saturday, it's all of our friends getting together. 10 breweries, 9 of which we helped open in one capacity or another. That we were next door neighbors.
Sure.
And good friends. Renegade, Brian. Brian's one of those early openers of the craft beer craze that didn't have anything to do with Tim. And the reason the Renegade is so successful is he learned nothing from me. and I'm so proud of him for not doing everything wrong that we did. Renegade's going to be there. Black Sky. Lila was my first employee. Harry and I brewed all those One Barrel Wednesdays together. Black Sky's going to be there. Wits End, who moved in with us.
Yep.
They're going to be there. The Brew on Broadway, the Bob, Zach and Chad from Chain Reaction, Jeff from Very Nice. Damn it, I drank too much. Let me pull the list up. I know I'm forgetting a couple. Don't hate me.
Maybe.
I already listened.
Damn it. Okay.
I already listened.
It's all right. We'll edit
Black
this.
Sky. You already said Black Sky?
I already said Black Sky.
I'm
we'll edit this to cut out the awkward silence.
Yeah, thank you. We're please. Oh, the miracle of editing. All right, honey, I'm pulling up the website and events aren't coming up first.
Dogfish hands.
Copper Kettle.
And caution.
Okay, so. All right, so Copper Kettle, Jeremy, we call him the professor. Here's a guy that got a PhD. He went all the way to PhD in college and said, screw this, I'm opening a brewery instead. And he was smart enough to just kind of come in and hang out at the bar and chat with me. And he pretty much figured out everything we did wrong. Just by hanging out with me and chatting at the bar. And he's like, well, this idiot can do it one barrel at a time. And I can see right now, just sitting at the bar, what he did wrong. We'll be okay. So Jeremy and Kristen over there at Copper Kettle are killing it. They're killing it over there. They're canning now.
It's funny because when we first started, aside from the Kentucky breweries from back home where I'm from, it was you guys and Copper Kettle were my first two brewery showcases on porch drinking. So yeah, it's really cool to see you all still staying so close, and then Renegade very shortly thereafter. So
the amazing part when Renegade opened in 2011, all of my regulars. We're like, oh my God, they're brewing 15 barrels at a time, and you idiots are doing one barrel at a time. They're going to put you out of business in weeks. And I was like, why? I mean, they're going to bring more people to the neighborhood.
Absolutely.
And sure, you know, the first week or two, everybody's over there drinking this new brewery's beer, and we're kind of, you know, hey, where the hell did everybody go? But after that, our business went up. You know, a rising tide raises all ships. And that's part of my philosophy from day one. Let's help everybody to make better beer, to build better businesses, to build better breweries. And we're all going to benefit from that.
That's awesome.
And Renegade helped us out by brewing opening so close.
That's really cool.
And then Caution, Danny, I feel a little bad for Danny because... The week after he leased his location, he found us. And he came in, and he leased like 900 square feet over east of Stapleton. And he came by to see what the hell we were doing. He sat down in the tasting room. He's like, oh, shit, a tasting room. That's what we forgot. And it was like 2 years before he could lease the space next door and add a tasting room. So he was 100% wholesale kegs for the first two years.
That's crazy.
And then he was finally able to open the tasting room, and now that's what? It's Brewability, right?
Yep, yeah. Brewability Lab.
And they're doing wonderful things over there. Mm-hmm. And he opened as a set. He was the first satellite brewery.
Yeah,
satellite
that's right.
Tasting room open on South Wadsworth in Lakewood.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you're capping it all off on Sunday with a recovery brunch here at the brewery, correct?
You gotta recover after a long week of drinking. We've got 10 gallons of michelada, strange michelada, aging in the squirrel. And, you know, I'm sorry, Uncle Bud, if you want to go after me with the michelada name, we're not calling it michelada. It'll be okay. We blended some Lindauer Lager from Wits End, some Maibock, May the 4th be with you.
Yes, fantastic.
And I don't know what the exact ratio was, but we got a boatload of real deal.
TM.
TM? What's TM?
Trademark.
Ratio. Whatever. I know a guy. I know a guy. He'll get me out of it.
What was his name? Carl.
He's got the litigator.
Real deal Bloody Mary mix. I'm pretty sure there's at least 2 gallons of real deal Bloody Mary mix in this 10 gallons of hangover cure. And it should be a fun Sunday.
That's awesome. Well, folks, once again, Strange Craft Beer celebrating their 8th anniversary. Where are you guys located? Give us the address for those who are inquiring.
We are in the middle of nowhere, apparently, because we still have people that can't find us. We're at the northeast corner of 13th and Zuni. Look for the big white building. We're on the east end right next to I-25. I do need to also state, and I don't know how this slipped through the cracks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once we're done with the backyard party from noon to four with 10 of our best friends, why not throw in a brewery bus loop with Seedstock, Black Sky, Renegade, and Strange? So you can party from noon to four for $25, all you can drink from 10 breweries, and then hop on the bus for $5 and hit 4 breweries, hop on and off as often as you want until 10 o'clock.
Holy cow, that sounds amazing.
It's
keeping it in the neighborhood.
I'm gonna make it to the recovery day about an hour before we close. Is when I'm planning on waking up. Oh no, that's not true. I have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old. I'm gonna be up by 6:30 on Sunday.
Gosh.
When I get home at 4:30. So yeah, I'll be super special on Sunday.
Well, folks, be sure to join Strange Craft all weekend long, starting tomorrow, or today, rather, when you listen to this podcast, with their special Wednesday release, and then really officially kicking off Thursday, releasing that Pinion Porter for Mug Club members, and then right through the weekend. We've got lots of events happening here at Strange Craft. Come celebrate one of the OGs of craft beer here in Denver. Tim, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Tristan, thanks for coming over. I really appreciate it. We've been doing this for 8 years, and the best part of it is everything that we get back from all of our friends in the biz and all of our beer-drinking friends. I can't even imagine doing anything else.
Tremendous. Yeah, we're so thankful for all that you've created here. And help to grow within this industry. Like I said, we've been following you all since the beginning. It's been really incredible to see you all.
Come by and help us celebrate 8 stupid years. Let's have some fun this weekend, and who knows, we might even make it to 10. We got a shot. I think we got a shot.
Absolutely. Well, once again, Sammy, Hunter, Sam, it's been great joining you all. We had a full house tonight. Hopefully, we'll keep this tradition going. This has been episode 51 of the Porchcast.
Area 51, strange crap.
Check you later.
'Cause like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow the Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.